So we're on Chaf Tes Amid Beis. We'll just go over the last small piece of Gemara that we did yesterday. And this is called Hoda Bifnei Shnayim. So let's see if we can find this Gemara of Hoda Bifnei Shnayim. And then, if possible, we'll look at Tosus Dibra Maskel Hoda. So if you have the standard Gemara of Bavli, then you'll see a Tosus Dibra Maskel Marbar of Ashi.
Yes.
And if you count up above Marbar of Ashi by about five lines, you'll see at the end of the line that starts with the word nasal, Hoda. So again, let's go over that one more time. We have Tosus Dibra Maskel Marbar of Ashi. And then we go up about five lines. Thank you so much. And you'll see a line that starts with the word nasal and ends with the word Hoda. Okay then? Okay. So this is what we did yesterday. Hoda Bifnei Shnayim. Now the Lova admits that he owes the money, and there are two Edom to testify, they're witnesses, but they don't have the ability to write a shtar. Why? Because they didn't get a commission from the Lova to write a shtar. This shtar is a very powerful tool in the hands of the Malva, and the Lova has to give his consent to write such a shtar. That's called Das HaMeschayev, if you remember that concept. And there's no Das HaMeschayev until the Lova says and commissions the Edom to write a shtar. However, Kanu Miyado, what the Lova did commission is a Kinyan Sudar. And basically a Kinyan Sudar takes like an abstract chov that I owe somebody money, and it makes it into a Kinyan. Because a chov is only a theoretical, you know, conceptual obligation to pay something. But when does it become something that the Malva, in this case, owns? That's through Kinyan Sudar. The Lova actually agreed to create a kinyan to, in a sense, transfer or generate ownership over this chov on behalf of the malva, and he did that through the method of the medium of a kinyan sudar. Now, in the note here, he mentions that Dagos Ashri, one of the Rishonim, says that hischayev lefroa adzman misuyam. He says that the kinyan sudar was to clinch the payment within a certain time period. In other words, it's not just the kinyan on the hodah, and the fact that he admits and he says so in front of two Edom that he owes the money. He says that's not anything more than a chov, so he's not sure what the kinyan adds over here. He wants to suggest that the kinyan has to create a new hischayvus. It has to extend beyond what was before the kinyan, and what was extended beyond, it was a certain time period in which, or by which I should say, the lova promises to pay up the money. So that's Dagos Ashri. But without Dagos Ashri, I think we could say that the kinyan now generates what's called shibud nechasim. Shibud nechasim means that the malva now has a lien over the lova's property, and that's generated by the Kinyan Sudar. Now, I'm not 100% happy with the Beis Yosef, because I would think that if there's already a Shibud, then what does the Shtar add? It's already, you know, you've already generated a Shibud on a Milva Bal Peh by making a Kinyan. So the answer has to be that the Shtar will generate a Shibud that could be collected from lekuchos, meaning normally if I buy money from you, why do I have to pay up your chov if you default on a loan? But the answer is that I know about the loan. How do I know about the loan? Because it's public knowledge. Why is it public knowledge? Because of the shtar. So the shtar upgrades the halva to a level of shibud such that now you can collect from lekuchos. Lekuchos means anyone who buys the property from the lova subsequent to the halva. And now the Gemara wants to tell us a big chiddush, that Kosmin, the Edom, have the right now, after the Kanu Miyado, to write a shtar. In other words, implicit in the agreement of the Lova to make this halva, this chov, an upgraded chov to the level of kanu miyado, which according to the Agos Shri means that now he has to pay by a certain time. According to Beis Yosef, now he has a shibud nechasim. Implicit in that agreement is the agreement to have a shtar written up. So even though the lova did not say the magic words, he did not actually commission the eidim write up a shtar, they can do that without getting express permission from the lova, because it's all implicit in his kadu miyado. So this is the principle which the Gemara formulates in Bava Basra Daf Mem called Stam Kinyan Liksiva Omed, that if a kinyan was made on a chov, then that gives, so to speak, the green light to the Eidim to write up a shtar and give a shtar to the hands of the one who's going to claim the money from the Mischayev. And even though the Mischayev in this case did not actually commission the writing of the shtar, but Stam Kinyan Liksiva Omed means that the very fact that he agreed to a Kinyan Sudar and he upgrades his Ischayvus to a whole new level of Kinyanim, implicit in that is permission to the Eidim to write up a shtar. And now the Malva is going to be equipped with a shtar. And there's a Das HaMischayev that's, again, and although it wasn't formulated explicitly, but it's implicit in the Kinyan Sudar. Vim lav, but on the other hand, if it was just an admission, if all we have is odas baldin, in which case the lova admitted in front of two eidim that he owes the money to the malva, but he did not agree to a kinyan sudar, so he never upgraded that chov and that hodah to the level of a kinyan, is ein kosvin. Then the eidim have no right to write up a shtar and hand it over to the toveah based on the fact that they saw and heard the admission of the lova. They need express permission from the lova das hamischayev to write up the shtar, and therefore they don't have any ability, the eidim, to assume ipso facto up front that the ratzon of the lova is to write up a shtar and give the malva shtar. He never agreed to go that far. He would rather keep it as a milva balpeh. He doesn't want to give a shtar. The shtar is a very, very powerful weapon. For example, if later on the lova claims I paid you up already, he's not going to be believed. Why? Because the malva has a shtar. That's called shtar chabiyotcha, my boy. So there's a great power in the shtar. In fact, the Gemara says in Makkos that you can take a shtar and you could sell it on the market and somebody else will collect your chov. You'll pay a certain percentage of the value, the face value. It's like buying bonds. Yeah, right, yeah, second. So he says that at this level, if there was no kanu miyado, then it's just a milva balpeh. It's not a milva b'shtar. The eidim don't have any rights to write up a shtar. So at this point, I'd like to take a look at Tosis Divya Maschil Hoda. And we'll see if this will be an experiment of sorts. If we can get something out of this tosfos. The afal gav dilo omar kisvu. So it means that if he does the odah b'fnei shnayim, and he admits that he owes a money to his friend, only if kanu miyado, the eidim received a kinyan sudar to make a kiyum to the hodah, it upgrades the level of the hodah, then, as we said before, the eidim have a right to go ahead and write a shtar and hand over that shtar with their signatures on it to the malva. So Tosa says, v'afal gav delo omar kisvu, even though the lova never commissioned the eidim explicitly to say, write a shtar, he never gave them permission to write the shtar, nevertheless, the eidim on their own initiative can write a shtar and give it over to the malva. Why? Mishum destam kinyan liksiva omed kidapirish hakuntris. Which means that if a person gives a kinyan to someone, then he understands, his das is that the eidim who saw the kinyan, they can write up a shtar. And that is based, as we said, on a gemara in Bava Basra. The gemara also says this in a number of other places, in Ksubis and elsewhere. Umiyu, however, says Tosfos, in Rotzo Lachzor Bo, if the lover wants to object, that he says, no, I don't want a shtar to be written, Choser, he has the right, he's legally has the rights to decide, I don't want a shtar. But in the absence of such a protest, we assume that since he made a kinyan, he agreed to the kinyan, he agreed to the shtar. And this is all based on a Gemara Bava Basra, Perek HaMocher HaSasfina. What was the case over there? It was a Omer L'Shnayim. He said to two Eidim, Zechu B'Sada Zula Ploni, I want you to be a shliach on behalf of so-and-so to make a kinyan and acquire this son on their behalf or on his behalf, whoever it might be. V'kisvu es ashtar, and write a shtar on behalf of the recipient such that he can prove that he received this gift. And the Gemara says, Chozer b'shtar, that the Mischayev, meaning the Nosein Hamatona, has Rishus to be Chozer both from Ksivas Ashtar. But Vienna Chozer b'soda, he cannot rescind his agreement in the Soda, because once he said the magic word Zechu b'soda Zulaploni, the Edim now serve the function, they play the role as the shliach of the Mekabalas HaMaton, Mekabalas HaSod, they were Zochin the Sod on his behalf, but as far as the shtar is concerned, that requires a separate mischayev, and there was no Dasa mischayev here because he was Chozer, but we assumed there was a Dasa mischayev, but he told us, no, I don't agree. So again, even though he initially said Kisvu lo es ashtar, which is even that's even a lot more than just a Kinyan Sudar, he explicitly said, write a shtar on behalf of the recipient, but nevertheless, the Gemara establishes that he can be Chozer bo. V'hadam Rida, now we have the Gemara in Masechta Ksubis. Now, the Gemara Masechta Ksubis, first of all, establishes this principle which is called Stam Kinyan Leksiva Omeid. And the Gemara says that if a person is admitting that he owes money, then he can do it be Ayin Yofa. Be Ayin Yofa means with like a full heart, he goes even beyond. And he's makna the chov through a kinyan sudar. And if that be the case, since he indicated b'ayin yofa, then he even tacitly agrees to have a shtar written up. So let's go through the Gemara in Ksubis as Tosus quotes it here. Does everybody have the place? Yeah. Omar li edim kisvu v'chismu. Write up a shtar, sign the shtar on behalf of so-and-so, that this is his field. V'havule, and pass on the shtar to him. And kanu miyado, if the edim received a kinyan, meaning again a kinyan sudar from the nosein hamatana, and again that gives a kiyum, a certain extra teeth to the hakna, to the process of transferring ownership over the sada to the recipient, is lo tzarch limluche. They don't have to go back and ask him, well, do you want to write up a shtar? Why? Because initially he told them, he instructed them to write a shtar. And moreover, he said, havule, not only a shtar, but kanumine, but make a kinyan sudar. So the extra mile that he went by adding a kinyan sudar, that clinches any possible shadow of a doubt as to whether or not the nosein hamatana, the giver of the gift, would agree to write a shtar. Or, shall we say, would rescind, because again, we said he has the ability to be chozer bo. So, in other words, you know, a person could have a das, and he could have a will at one moment of time. He could change his mind at time T2 as time goes by. But in this case, where not only did he instruct the people, the eidim, to write the shtar, at time T1, so he certainly had das for the writing of the shtar and the giving of the shtar over to the Makabal Matana, but not only that, moreover, he was Kanum Yodo. And the Kanum Yodo tells me that he has full 100% agreement to the writing of the shtar. And he's not in any way rescinding and voiding his original commitment. So now Tosus is going to ask Akasha, what bothers Tosus from the Gemara in Ksubis? He's not clear. Why is it saying in the Gemara that Omar li edim kisvu v'chismu, that the Nosein Hamatana explicitly commissioned the writing of the shtar? Why is that necessary? Because the Gemara says that it was Kanum Yodo. If it was Kanum Yodo, then our Gemara establishes that Stam Kinyan Leksiva Omeid, we don't need the Mischayev to give explicit instructions to write up the shtar. Kanum Yodo itself implicitly indicates that he has commissioned the Eidim to write the shtar. So why does the Gemara have to add the principle called add the piece of the puzzle, the scenario, that Omar li edim kisvu chsmu, that he instructed them. He didn't have to instruct them because it was kana miyada. Says Tosus lav dafka. It doesn't mean that only in the case where he said ksuvu and in time T1, he gave explicit instructions to write the shtar hu adin, it would also apply afagav to lo omar ksuvu. So now the question is, why did the Braisa say that he instructed the Eidim to write the shtar? Leave that out. It's just superfluous information because it was kana miyado. And if it was kana miyado, there was a kinyan suda. There's no need for him to explicitly instruct the Eidim to write the shtar. Haidomer kisvu. Why did the Braisa add that piece? Mishum seifa nakti, because of the seifa. And the sefer is, it says hechadolo kanumine, in the sefer, which we want to establish the possibility of chazara. So the possibility of chazara exists if there was no kinyan. So there was no kanumiyade. Is afagav diomer ksuvu, even if he instructed the edim, but now he could change his mind, and therefore tzarich limluche, we have to go back and ask the edim and ask the no sein hamatana before the Eidim go ahead and write the shtar. Does he still, at time two, right, did you change your mind? Or do you still have the same das that you had when you instructed us to write the shtar? So here's where we need that critical piece of Amar li Eidim kisvu uchismu. Because here we're talking about a case of lo kanu miyado, and the chiddush of the Braisa is that the only reason the Eidim could write the shtar is A, because he, from the get-go, he commissioned them originally to write the shtar, and B, because they're going to ask him whether he changed his mind, and he's going to say, no, I didn't change my mind. So he gives again agreement to write the shtar. But if we don't get the second agreement, then we think that maybe he was chozer, but maybe he changed his mind. So since the sefer, this braisa, tells us that if a person says kisvu sada zilaploni, in other words, write the shtar, and even though there was no kana miyado, nevertheless he has revealed his das that he wants a shtar, he agrees that the shtar should be written, and the makabel matana will be equipped with a shtar, but nevertheless the braisa wants to teach us that tzarich limluche bei, even though he gave explicit permission, we have to make sure that he wasn't chozer bo. So the reisha here mentions kisvu only agav the sefer, only because in the sefer we need kisvu. So he mentions kisvu in the reisha, but in the reisha he doesn't have to have kisvu. Even if he wouldn't say kisvu, the eidim don't have to ask him because since it was kanu miyado, therefore his das is that they should write a shtar. That's called kanu miyado. Now here's part two of this Tosfos. V'hadika Amar, and that which it says in that Braisa in Ksuvus, that if he instructs the Eidim to write and sign the shtar on behalf of the recipient, kanu minei, if there was a kinyan suda, lo tzarech lem luchei bei, he don't have to ask him a second time. Don't think that lav mishum sheina yochal lachzor b'shtar. We've established in our sugya, if you recall, that was the beginning, the opening line of Tosus here, that even though it was kanu miyado, nevertheless the mischayev, in this case the nosein matana, in our case the lova, has a right to rescind his agreement, and it could be chozer bo. So again, when we're saying that kanu miyado lo tzarich limluche bei means that since it was kanu miyado, we have every right to assume, unless we know otherwise, that he sticks to his guns, his original agreement, and he's committed to the shtar. But he does have the right, he reserves the right, to be chozer bo, and he can change his mind. El mistama, but if we don't hear to the contrary, it's called kamed lo hoder bei, Rotza hu sheyichtavu, he certainly wants the shtar to be written, and that's the unique status of kanu miyado. So what's the difference between the reisha and the sefer? In the sefer we said that there was no kanu miyado, and even though he gave explicit commission to write the shtar, we still have to ask him, hey, are you still of that mindset? Did you change your mind? But in the reisha where there was kanu miyado, then we have a mistama, which means that unless we know otherwise, we can assume that lo hader bei, he didn't change his mind. So we don't have to knock on his door and ask him, are you still okay in favor of writing the shtar? But enochinami, if the no sein hamatana would make a statement, I don't want a shtar, he could still be chozer bo. So again, in the case of Kana Miyada, we don't have to ask whether he changed his mind. We can assume that he didn't change his mind. Tei that, I'm going to bring a proof of this, to Ha, in a case where he said, Kisvu Shtar Leploni V'lo Kana Miyada, Lo Kana Minei, and that's the safest, Pshita Dematzi Hadarvei. Then for sure he could be chozer bo. Why? Because lo kana miyade. There was never a kinyan. It was just dvarim. He just commissioned the writing of the shtar. Now it could be what Tosus might have in mind. I don't know. This is just Berzon's idea that maybe the shtar has two different halachas to it. There's one halacha of writing the shtar, and then there's another halacha of handing over the shtar into the hands of the person who's going to collect based on the shtar. And it could be that we need das for both. It's not enough that the Mischayev agreed to the writing of the shtar. Okay, you've created a shtar, but the shtar is right now sitting on the table. It has the potential. It has the two signatures. But you also need a das to give over the shtar. That's called mesiras hashtar, to hand over the shtar. And here's the difference between kana miyado and lo kana miyado. In a case of lo kana miyado, we need a separate... An additional reiteration. We need a second commission. He has to repeat himself, and we have to ask him a second time around, even though we heard from him explicitly he has to write the shtar, that we should write the shtar, but now we need the mesiras hashtar, that's the clincher. He needs a das that he agrees that the shtar could now, after being written, could be transmitted over to the makabel matana, over to the malveh. However, in the case of kana miyado, here, the kana miyada creates a complete das, total das, that encompasses both the writing of the shtar and the handing over the shtar to the one to whom he's going to be chayev. Okay, so let's take a break in this Tosis because, you know, we have a limited amount of time. I want to get back to the Gemara itself. Now, until now, what we've been discussing is a case of hodah b'fnei shnayim. And we had a long discussion yesterday about the fact that he, the Lova, has to commission the Edom and say, Atem Edai. Or if the Malva says, Atem Edai, in front of the Lova, and the Lova says nothing, we assume he agrees that these two Edom can serve as Edom. Now, if the Edom, in their capacity, want to write a shtar, they need Kanu Miyado, or get explicit instructions from the Mischayev, from the Moda, that they should write a shtar and give it over to the Malva. But is there a situation, I'm just saying this by introduction, a preview of what's coming around the bend here, that you don't even need kanu miyado. You can completely obviate kanu miyado, and the witnesses can write up a shtar, give it over to the malva, even without kanu miyado. So they have neither the explicit instruction from the lova, nor do they have kanu miyado, and yet they can write the shtar. And the Gemara actually raises such a possibility. What is that possibility? Let's say that when he says Atem Edai, the Lova is turning not to two witnesses, but to three witnesses, the three musketeers. We have Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. V'lo kana miyado. So he made his hodah in front of three people, and he commissioned them to be there, and he knew that he was making a serious binding admission in front of three Edom. Is Rav Ami Omar, again, there's a Girsa issue here, whether it's Rav or Rav Ami, but whoever it is, Kosvin, they can write a shtar, give it over to the Malva, Shalom Midas Halova, even though the Lova has not commissioned them, or even by implication, commissioned them to write the shtar and give it to the Malva. And as I said before, giving a shtar to the Malva gives the Malva a tremendous weapon in his hand, as far as this chov is concerned. So what's the logic here that simply because you added a third witness, therefore the halacha should change? And now, what do you say? Oh, excellent. Now again, I'm not sure if literally, we should take this Gemara literally and it means that these three now form a Bezdin, or maybe it's like a Bezdin. And if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says, where is it? Shlosha Asan Bezdin. I don't know what that means, Asan Bezdin. This is about halfway down the page. I don't know if the litigant, in this case the Lova, has the rights to create a Bezdin. I mean, there are many there are many conditions that have to be met in order to set up a bezdin. You need a yeshivas bezdin. They have to sit down and they have to be koveh themselves as a bezdin. You need certain ksherim for bezdin. But be it as it may, Rashi says shlosha son bezdin. And to what extent are they vested with the authority of a bezdin? Hefker on hefker. That Bezdin could ultimately decide that your money belongs to him and his to you. You know, that they have total sovereign control over the ownership of Mammon. And therefore, they have the right to convert, to transform a milveh valpeh into a milveh bishtar. That also is within the purview of the Hefker Bezdin, Hefker authority of a Bezdin. So it means that really, according to the strict letter of the law, if we open up Choshen Mishpat, we would say in this case there's no shibud on the chasim to collect from lekuchas. We're talking about a milv bal peh. The lover said, I owe you the money, but there's no shtar over here. But the answer is that Bezdin could now create a shibud of a shtar, even though there is no shtar, because the Meschayev did not commission them in any shape or form to write a shtar, and they can take the initiative and transform this halva, this chov, from a milv bal peh to a milv bishtar through the power of the authority of Hefker Bezdin Hefker. And what do you mean? Did the Lova agree to go to a Bezdin? You can't force it down his throat. But the answer is, since his hodo was in front of three people, then we assume that he understood that these three people could serve as a Bezdin. So it's not just a hodo. There are two types of hodo. There's one hodo where you admit that you owe money in front of a pair of Eidim, and then there's another hodo where you walk into a Bezdin and you make a hodo. I mean, in that case, the entire system changes. The whole nature of the claims and counterclaims changes. Now you made a hodo in front of Bezdin. Bezdin are now authorized to take this hodo and run with it. They can do whatever they want, whether from Kansas City or San Francisco. I don't think it makes any difference. But what they could do now is they could take a milveh bal peh and, as we said, transform it into a what? A milveh bishtar. And it also means, by the way, that they could appoint a shliach. It doesn't mean that they themselves have to write up the shtar. They can appoint someone as what we call a shliach bezdin to write up the shtar. And the shtar will now take will have the status and the legally binding status of a shtar based on this bezdin, because the bezdin can appoint a shliach to write a shtar. That's basically, you should know, that any time that there's a litigation in a Jewish court and bezdin comes to the conclusion that Ploni chayev, that he has to pay, then what they do is immediately they set a shliach of bezdin and they tell him to write up the shtar. Why? Because, okay, we now decided that Shimon owes Reuven 1,000, but tomorrow Shimon is going to say, well, I paid up the 1,000. So Shimon is not going to be able to be believed to say, I paid up based on the verdict of Bezdin until he gets the shtar back from the one to whom he's chayav. So that's standard procedure, that whenever Bezdin comes to a conclusion about some sort of chiv mamon and that verdict was handed down, they appoint a shliach to write up a shtar. And that's what's going to happen here, according to Rav or Ravasi, whichever girsi you have, in the case of Hodah b'fnei Shlosha. Hodah b'fnei Shlosha takes on the complexion of Hodah b'fnei Bezdin. Bezdin now, based on the fact that they know, because they heard it from Shimon, that he's chayav to pay 1,000 to Reuven, they will commission a shliach to write up the shtar, and that shtar will be given over to the malva. Now again, usually a shtar has to be commissioned by the lov himself, the mischayev. He has to appoint the shliach. And the shliach then writes up the shtar as a shliach on behalf of the lov, and then he gives it over to the malva. However, if the hodah was in front of Bezdin, then we don't need the lov to appoint the shliach. Bezdin themselves have the independent authority to appoint the shliach, as if the shliach was operating in place of the lov, even though the lov did not appoint the shliach. And this shliach could write up a shtar hodah as a shliach of Bezdin. And that shtar hodah obviously will be handed over to the malveh. Now, again, if your girsa in the Gemara is Ravasi, you're not going to be able to read the next line of the Gemara. But let's take the girsa of the Rif and the Rush. It's Rav instead of Ravasi. Because now we're going to have a statement from Ravasi, and he's going to disagree with Rav. I always found it fascinating that Rav Asi could disagree with Rav, because Rav Asi was a Talmud of Rav Yochanan, who was a contemporary of Rav. So it's very interesting that Rav Asi has the authority to disagree with Rav. Anyway, Ein Kosvin. We're not going to recognize the rights of these three individuals in whose presence the Lova confessed that he owes the money to the Malva, and we're not going to invest in them the power and the authority of a Bezdin. All the Lova meant to say was, "You be my witnesses." We don't Atem Eda. He never said Atem Bezdin. Again, usually all you need is two witnesses, but in this case, for whatever reason, he had three witnesses. So let's say there was a third person that he didn't want to insult him, so he said, "Okay, you also be one of my Aiden." But there was never an express permission or acceptance on the part of the Lover that he wants them to be a Bezdin. So let's take the minimum amount of his kavod. His intention was that he wants a ribuy of Aiden. He wants more Aiden. But not that he wants a Bezdin.
Well, the fact that three were there doesn't mean that he was talking to three people, because he was looking at two people and said the same word, Atem Eda.
Right. But what happens, and that's what the Gemara is going to discuss later, when he says to the Malve, I would like to gather together three people and make the Hodah in front of three people. That would indicate he went he took an extra step over. He went one mile beyond, and he really wants them to be a Bezdin. But if there happen to be three people hanging around, and the Lova says, "I'm going to make a confession, an admission in front of you three guys," then it doesn't mean that he made them into a Bezdin and he authorized them to write up a shtar as a Bezdin has the authority to do. So he just authorized them to be Eidim. And that's just called Ribuy Eidim. That's Rav Asi's argument. In other words, a person is innocent until proven guilty. You can't write a shtar unless you're absolutely convinced that he, the Lova, the Mishayev, wanted to and commissioned, either implicitly or implicitly, to write up a shtar. But you have to have definite evidence to that effect. And the definite evidence could be in one of two ways, and Rav here added a third way, with Rav Asi objects to the third way. The two ways that certainly is, if the Lova commissions the writing of a shtar, he tells the Eidim explicitly, write up a shtar. Again, we may have to ask him later on, if he changes his mind. Or number two, if there was a kinyan miyado, then even if he didn't tell the Eidim that they should write up a shtar, they on themselves and their own initiative will write up the shtar on behalf of the Malva. Why? Because he said, I'll make a kinyan sudar. And now Rav adds a third scenario in which there's a possibility of writing the shtar and giving it over to the Malva, and that's in a case of shlosha. And comes along Rav Asi, he says the first two, if A, the Lova explicitly said, "I commission you to write the shtar," or B, it was kind of the other, which is an implicit agreement to write the shtar, that's fine. But just because there were three Eidim there, therefore, so again, as we said before, Rav Asi's principle is innocent until proven guilty. You need certain conditions that have to be met in order to write up a shtar. It's not just carte blanche. It's not just a hefkervelt. You just Eidim will write up a shtar. You need a das hamischayev. So if there was das hamischayev and we asked him a second time, or alternatively it was a kinyan miyada, which is an implicit das hamischayev, that's fine. Now you can write up a shtar. But in the absence of A and B, what are you going to tell me that because he agreed to a third witness, therefore he agreed that they should be upgraded to the status and the authority of a Bezdin? Mehechatesi, how do you know such a thing? You have the burden of proof to establish that he, the Lova, with his admission, accepted them as a Bezdin. And until I know absolutely sure, I'm not going to assume against the will of the Lova that you can write up the shtar as if he had appointed them as a Bezdin. Havi uvdo. And a case came in front of Rav, v'chashle Rav lahod Rav Asi, and Rav himself, although he lishitasa would say that the three so-called dayanim could write up the shtar, nevertheless he was choshesh for the shita of Rav Asi, that as long as there was no explicit horah, there was no explicit instruction or kinyan v'konam yodo to write up the shtar, then they don't have the authority to write up the shtar. So when these three, I don't know whether to call them witnesses or judges, they came in front of Rav, and they anticipated that Rav would tell them, go ahead and write the shtar, because the Lova admitted in your presence, he meant to make you into a bezdin. And that's what they thought Rav would do. But to their surprise, and this raised eyebrows, Rav was choshesh for the shita of Rav Asi. And therefore he said, you know what, we're not going to allow the writing of the shtar. We don't have proof positive that will take us over the ridge to prove that the lover really wants the writing of the shtar. Omar of Adabarava Ha Odisa, there was a shtar hoda that was written up when the lover admitted the chov in front of three. And Rav Adabarav is not describing an actual case that took up, but rather he is drawing the sketch, the lines, for when and under what circumstances can you take a hodah and turn it into an odisa. Odisa is the Aramaic word for a hodah b'shtar, meaning when you have a document, the document which testifies to an admission is called an odisa, and it all depends. Zimnin kasvinin, zimnin lo kasvinin. In certain conditions, if they're met, then we will write up a shtar because of the presence of three. And in other situations, we will not write up a shtar without the explicit sivui of the lovo, without konamiyot. So what are these conditions? So this is what Rav Adabarava is going to explain. I was always amazed at his father's name, Ahava.
Yeah.
You know, we have a girl's name. We just have a granddaughter. Her name is Ahuva. That's what they named her.
Yeah.
But Ahava for a man, I mean, that's a little bit strange. But, you know, it's a great name, I guess. I haven't heard. Did anybody know of a man by the name of Ahava today? I don't know.
I know Rabbi Love.
Oh, Rabbi Love? Okay. So here's the deal. Under what circumstances do we not write up the shtar? Under what circumstances do we allow the three to write up the shtar? Knife v'yasve, if these three individuals were already gathered together, they were sitting down, you know, they were having lunch together, and the lover comes in front of them, and he's moda, and he says, yeah, well, let's assume the malva is also there, right? So the malva says to the lover in front of these three people in the luncheonette, he says to them, hey, you owe me a mana. So the lover says, yeah, I owe you a mana. It's lo kasvinin. In that case, even though the hodah was in front of three, they don't have a status, those three, as a bezdin, they are aidin. Because it's very possible, as we said before, that the lover did not have an intention to appoint them as a bezdin. But kanfinu ihu, if it was the lover who took the initiative, it wasn't that three people were sitting in a lunchroom and the malva approached the lover for a hodah, but rather the lover, was looking around. He's machazer.
Yeah.
He was looking for three people. Why was he looking for three people? Why kanfinu did he gather them together? The answer is he wanted them to serve as a bezdin, and he had full agreement that they would be authorized with whatever powers are authorized are invested in the dayanim, and therefore kasvinan, we will write up a shtar based on the hodah of the lover in front of this bezdin. And bezdin, as we said before, has the power to write up such a shtar hodah, which is called an odisa, even without asking the lover for his explicit commission. Now, what confuses me is, why does bezdin go ahead and take that extra step? What commits them, or what motivates them to go that far? Okay, so they heard hodah, and they have, if the lover gathered them together, says Rav Adabarava, they've been recognized by the lover as a bezdin. But okay, fine. Therefore, the fire is bust, as we said. Therefore, you write up a shtar. I mean, who bludgeons them? What mitzvah d'oraisa obligates the bezdin to write up a shtar? So the thought occurred to me, and I don't know if this is correct, is that odah in front of a bezdin, it doesn't even require what we call a gmar din. A gmar din is a formal process of a deliberation, then amida ledin, they take a vote, and then finally they serve or they present the verdict. You know, it has all those, you know, it's a process that has all those stages to it. You know, first they go to deliberation and they bring in the evidence, and then they go back and forth, and they stand up, take a vote, and then finally they present their Gemara Din. There's one situation, I don't know of another one, where Beis Din could circumvent the whole process, and it's almost a built-in Gemara Din, automatic. They don't have to go through this, that, and that. And that is Hodah B'fnei Beis Din. Once somebody there was a tefiah against him. Once a person has a claim against him, and in the presence of a Beis Din, he admits that he owes that money, that's a built-in Gemara Din. I don't need anything. I don't need deliberations. I don't need evidence. I don't need shakla v'tayr between the dayanim. None of that. It's an automatic Gemara Din. And you'll ask me, my nafkimina. The nafkimina is that Beis Din now will write up a shtar. Why? Because whenever Beis Din comes to the conclusion, they hand down a verdict, then the person who was zakai, who has now rights to collect from the mischayev based on the psak Beis Din, he has rights to say to Beis Din, give me some sort of a proof. Because in event that he'll claim he paid me up, give me some sort of a document. And that's what's happening here, that Beis Din actually are obligated to write up this shtar and give it to the malva, because ball game over. Now we have a Gemara Din. We don't have to go through the whole process. Again, you might ask, well, we still have to collect the money. Okay, that's only an issue of collection. But as far as the chiyuv is concerned, the chiyuv has been well established by Beis Din, and they should write up a shtar to that effect, that this was the decision. We heard the Hodas Faldin, let's write an Odisa, and give it over to the hands of the Malva. All this is according to Rav Ada, the son of whom? Of Ava. That's great. We love Ava. But Rava disagrees. Rava Marfilu Kanfinu Ihu. I still hold that you're innocent until proven guilty. I still haven't crossed the precipice here. Even though the Lovit took the initiative and gathered together three, he didn't say you should be my Beis Din. Those holy words did not come out of his mouth. Lo kasvino, they don't serve as a Beis Din. They're not authorized to write up a shtar odah. Adi amale, until he says to them, havu alai dayonim, you serve as my dayonim. And again, there's a psychological principle here that sort of, you know, it's underlies Rava's approach here, that sometimes it's true that a lover, and especially if the malva, you know, pushes him in that direction, will agree to make the alva in front of three eidim. So until he says those magic words, havu alai dayonim, he has not accepted them as dayonim. So we need an explicit statement on his part, according to Rava, that you are my dayonim. Otherwise, we assume that he wants ribui eidim. Now, why does he want ribui eidim? I mean, two eidim are enough. But you know what? The malva did me a great favor. He lent me 1,000, and now I want to secure. I want him to feel secure that he'll get his money back. So I'll introduce three eidim. You know, let's say two eidim will go. You know, we'll be hanging around, and the third aid maybe we'll get called on a you know, some sort of a what's called AACI trip to, I don't know where they go now, to
everywhere.
To everywhere, you know, take you for a month out of Eretz Yisrael. That's Americans for Aliyah, you understand? Americans and Canadians for Aliyah. So they take you a month out of Torah and they bring you somewhere. I find it a little paradoxical, but be that as it may, we want to have three eidim, make sure that at least two out of the three will be available for testimony. So Rava says, you know, we didn't hear from the Lova that he accepted them as a Beis Din. He accepted them as eidim. And again, there's a limit to how far the Lova is willing to go. You know, the Lova is making a hodah in front of witnesses, nay, in front of three witnesses. That's enough. But don't talk to me about a shtar. I'm not interested in giving him a shtar. Why? Because that means total trust in him. And by the way, when I say total trust, I mean I'm trusting his memory. I don't know if you've ever had the experience where, you know, somebody paid you back and you don't remember that he paid you back. So, you know, you look into your drawer and you pull out a document that says, hey, this guy owes me $1,000. Maybe he paid my wife, you know, I was away, and he paid one of my young children. You know what I'm saying? I don't know anything about that. I got the shtar. So it's not just a matter of that the lover doesn't trust the malva. You know, he has great hakar satov for the malva. The malva saved him. You know, he was in such dire straits, he needed the alva. But a shtar is already a different story. So Rava says, you must have one of two things, either explicit instruction from the lover to write the shtar and give it to the malva, or konumiyot. Konumiyot is a whole different halacha in which the shibud and the chov balpeh is transformed into a chov b'shtar.
Why doesn't the malva write a shtar at the time of the lending?
Yeah, the problem is that the malva may have lost his shtar. Right? We have a whole sugi of metzia about a malva who lost his shtar. And not only that, it could be that the malva didn't find two eidim. It's also a question who has to pay for the writing of the shtar. You know, today I don't know what fees you have to pay for a shtar, but in those days there was what's called schar sofer. Now, if let's say Gershon, I need a halva, right? Halva could be 100 shekel. It doesn't have to be 100,000 shekel. So I come to you after davening and I say, you know what, Gershon, I forgot my wallet at home. Can you lend me 100 shekel?
Yeah.
So you're not going to say, Rabbi Berzon, you know, you're a nice guy, but let's get two eidim, let's write up a shtar and have him sign the shtar and this and that, you know? So that's called a milv bal peh. Milv bal peh, by the way, is very common. Now, if we're talking about large sums of money,
but
then
why would he be so the doc taken wanted to collect it? I mean, you know.
Right. So he comes to collect it, and the lover doesn't have a dime in his pocket. So the malva says, "Well, you know, at least calm me down. You know that at some point in the future you'll pay it up. So make a hodah in front of two eidim, and that's almost like a shtar. It's one notch less than a shtar, and." The malva would love to get, you know, at this point when he sees the lover is, you know, I don't want to say playing hanky-panky, but he's almost ready to default on his loan. You know, the malva says, give me a shtar. You know, don't just, words are cheap. You know, the eidim are here today and gone tomorrow. I don't know where they're going out to, I shouldn't say China, but, and they're not around, so give me a shtar. And the shtar will guarantee that I'll be able to collect it. And again, you know, you talk about Kodom Yodu and Nagos Hashri, he wants to make sure that the Lova now accepts that by a certain deadline he'll pay up. So you know, I could be very magnanimous. I can offer you a halva of a substantial sum and I can trust you. But at some point I'm getting a little cold feet over here. Like, what's going on? You're not paying me up. And you're telling me, well, you know, you're foot dragging, I don't have the money right now, etc., etc. So I would love to get a hodav if neishnayim. And if I can go even beyond that and get a shtar into my hands on such a sum of money, that would really put a smile on my face. There was another idea that I wanted to mention, just see if I can remember it. It just popped out of my head. Since shtar, and we want to say that there's a shtar hodod, odisa, and now he produced the shtar. This is a question that I wanted to ask you. The difference between a milv bal peh and a milv b'shtar, amongst other things, but the most fundamental difference is shibud nechasim, to collect from lekuchos, which means that if I borrow money from you, my possessions, as long as I hold on to them, are lien to pay that chov. But if I sell my possessions, then you don't have a lien on that. You can only have what's called a shibud aguf and collect from me, the lover, who borrowed the money. You can't collect from anybody else unless there was a shtar written up. So the fundamental difference between a milva bal peh and a milva b'shtar is what we call gviya milakuchos. Do you have a lien on the karka such that you could collect from those who buy the karka? I'm just wondering, what happens in the following scenario, which I think could be very relevant to Asugi. Initially, when the money was given over to the lover, there was no shtar. It was a milv bal peh. That means that there's no lien on his property. And he has a shibud aguf, but no shibud karka. What happens if the malva now is tovea the loaf in front of two Edim, and he demands a hoda, the loaf is willing to be moda, he's an honest guy, and then the malva wants to go a step further, he wants to get a shtar. And again, we have at least two and maybe even three possible scenarios in which the malva will be equipped with a shtar. Number one, the Edom will write up the shtar because the Lova commissioned them to do so. Number two, because Kadam Yodo. And number three, according to Rav, because they were three Edom and not two Edom. At what moment in time, or shall we say from what moment in time, does the Halva change its status and it's upgraded to a Milva Malpeh? Is the Mafreya retroactive from the moment that the Lova got the money a month ago, a year ago? Or is it Mikano Lahaba from this moment in time when the shtar is written up? And the nafkamina is going to be, what happened if during this interim period between the time of the Matan Mos, when the Lova got the money, and the time that they're writing up the shtar and giving it over to the Malva, in the middle, he sold his karka? Does the Malva have recourse, in event that the Lova defaults on his loan, to collect from the Lekuchos? Exactly. Right. The Lekuchos have to know about the lien on the shtar. When they bought the karka, there was no lien on the shtar. So we need what's called a kol, kufav lamed. And the kol, which makes it public knowledge, today we have, you know, registries and, you know, and so forth, so on, the municipality. But back in the day, it was kol. And kol is generated by the shtar. So you can't hold the Lekuchos responsible, our raven, like their cosign is to back up and guarantee this halva, if they had no way of knowing about the halva. So the shtar of the malva, in this case, is really important for the malva so that he'll get his money, but I'm not sure if it's that important in order to allow the malva to collect from Lekuchos. Now, it could be that there's a time period that elapsed between the writing of the shtar and the lova sale of the karka, if you follow what I mean. I was assuming that the reason why the malva wants the shtar is because the lova turns his pockets upside down. He says, I'm penniless. But let's say the lova still has a piece of karka stashed away somewhere, and he sells it subsequent to the hodah. And in the aftermath of the Hodah, in the footsteps of the Hodah, they wrote a Shtar Odisa. And that Shtar Odisa was handed over to the Malva, and then the Lova sold his karka. It could be in that case, the Lekuchos now, again, it would have to be the following. It would have to be, A, that the Shtar was written, we'll call it on February 1st, and B, that the Lekuchos purchased the karka from the Lova on February 2nd. And in that case, the malva would have recourse to collect from the lekuchos. Marv Rav Ashi Omar Afilu Omar Havuli Dayone Lo Kasvina. Now this is wild. I mean, how far can you go? He, the lova, commissioned these three individuals to become Dayone and Lo Kasvina. So this Rabosai comes back to my question from the beginning, when we quoted Rav and we said Bifnei Shlosha. And the reason for that we said is because since there are three, is their status of Shlosha is Kibezdin. That's what we said. We added the Chaf, which is called the Chaf Adimyon. So to what extent do they really have the status of a Bezdin? Is it that the Lova gave them certain power and authority to function as a Bezdin, or are they really a Bezdin? And Rav Ashi says they're not a Bezdin because there are technical conditions that have to be met in order for a Bezdin to become a Bezdin. The Lova can't live up to those conditions. If you want to talk about Kosvin, then you're going to have to talk about the Lova creating some sort of hypothetical Bezdin. You know, it's a phenomenological Bezdin. It exists in his conscious mind, but it's not a real Bezdin. And why isn't it a real Bezdin? Adekvi duchta. Because one of the technicalities and preconditions of establishing a bezdin is what's called kviya duchta, lekvoa makom. Duchta means a makom. So the shlosh have to be kovea makom, kidei ladun kiderech hadayonim, in order to function as judges. As long as they're standing on 2 feet, listening to a hodah, they are edim, they're not a bezdin. Because bezdin yoshvim b'makom kavu alehem. And then where they sit on their own initiative, or the Lova gets them together, they have the status of a Bezdin, but they need a yeshiva b'makom kavua. They have to be kovei makom. Now, I don't know if you've ever learned Arvei Pesachim, but there's an interesting, I'm not sure if it's analogous or a parallel, there's an interesting kalach of kviyas makom when it comes to brach achrona. And that's a sugya in Pesachim. What it means is that I started eating my meal here, and then I decided to continue my meal there. And the question is, where do I have to bench? You know, benching requires a kviyas makom, makom suda. There's also halacha in Kiddush, for example, being koveya makom. There's halacha in Korban Pesach, that, you know, you can't just start, you know, eating the Korban Pesach here and then decide I'm going to eat it up in the attic. It's got to be in a makom kavua. So this tefillah also, prayer, again, this is not critical, but it certainly enhances your tefillah if you have a makom kavua. So the halacha makom kavua is a very interesting halacha and applies in so many areas of Shas. But here, it's a precondition in Yeshiva's Bezdin. So Ravashi, my Ravashi says, wait a minute. He happens to find these three guys in a lunchroom, and he says to them, I want you to be my Dayanim. Well, sorry, buddy, that doesn't make them into Dayanim. Again, ultimately, the Lova is going to be happy that they're not Dayanim, because they won't be able to write up a shtar. So therefore, this Hodah becomes Hodah, says my Ravashi, in front of Eidim, but it's not Hodah in front of Dayanim. They don't have the authority to write up a shtar. Vishalchi mizmani le lebeit dina. Now Rav Rashi adds another condition, another legal, procedural requirement in the status and the authority of a bezdin, and that is they have to send a shliach. They have to subpoena the lova to show up in front of them, and they send a shliach in their name, meaning he carries the word of the Bezdin, and they come to the Lova, they knock on his door, and they said, my friend, you are invited, I'm going to use that word, you are invited to the Bezdin because they're going to judge you now. And then he comes and he's Moda Bifneim, that's already a different story. Then, of course, the Bezdin function as a full-fledged Bezdin, and the Hodah gives them, as we said before, Gemar Din power, and they can write up a shtar and give it over to the malva and make it into a milvah shtar. Now, he writes here the following. I'll just read this to you. He says that milvah shtar govim in a chasim mishubadim, which means that the malva, once he has the shtar, he can collect from lekuchos. Shekein zeh milvah mefursam, because it's well known. And therefore, lekuchos should have been careful before you spend money to buy a piece of real estate. You better check out if there's any mortgage, if there's any outstanding lien. Shibudim. But a milvah malpeh, you can't collect from a shubadim. Even if there was alvah b'fnei eidim, it's a milvah malpeh until there's a shtar written, and it's not mefursam. And therefore, you cannot hold the lekuchos responsible for buying a piece of karka with a shibud on it. There was no way, no how they could know about that shibud. Now, im lova balpeh, so there was no shtar, v'sholchu lo hadayonim, but there was a beznin, and they subpoenaed the lova to show up in front of them, v'amad bidin, and there was a judgment, harei akshav halva zu mefursemes. Ah, you hear what he's asking? If we need, in order to create a shibud, and collect from lekuchos, we need some sort of public nature, it's public knowledge, it's accessible, you know, you go online and you find out about it, then what happens in the case where Bezdin is going to write up this shtar? I mean, in the meantime, it's not mefursam. So the answer is that anything that happens, any decision of Bezdin itself has a pirsum element to it. And now it gives the halva a status of halva mefursemes. And therefore, it makes sense that Bezdin could write up a shtar, and that shtar will create a shiva that will be collectible from Mishubod.
Would a guarantor be treated the same way as the debtor? I mean, if he made a declaration that he was the guarantor on this loan?
Ah, you mean, would the lekuchos be able to collect from the arevim? Let's say, so the arev signed the shtar arvus, and then subsequently he sold his karka. I don't know. I'm not sure what the din is. That's an excellent question. Do Do you have a case in mind?
No, I mean, just,
I was wondering if
you know, I mean, if you know, the guarantor, you know, slips in to be like the
right,
the
he replaces the loafer, right. I would say
it's really just, not the same status, right. Because they really never expect to have to.
I just intuitively, again, I'm sure there's a sugya about what you're saying. I'm just not familiar with the sugya. It would probably be in one of the bavas, maybe in Bava Basra. That's really the Masecht of Shibudin. I would say the following, that it would depend. Some Arevim agree orally to be Arevim, and others are mentioned in the shtar itself. So if the Malva, for example, says to the Lova, I demand Arevim, I'm not willing to extend this loan to you unless there are the co-signers, and I want them signed on the shtar, it could be that the signature on the shtar, with their name on the shtar, that generates a shibud even vis-a-vis the karka of the Arevim. But certainly in a case of Arvas Bal Peh, I would think that you cannot collect from the karka of the Arevim. That's just shooting from the hip, as we call it. Now, before we end, I just want to say that we're about to embark upon a sugya here at the bottom of Chav Tes Amid Beis, which hopefully we'll pick up tomorrow. And this is a sugya about the difference between Hodah B'Metaltelin and Hodah B'Karkoi. That I might be asking for a piece of an object, you know, let's say a pearl or something that's gold, and that's called what? That's called metaltali. Or I might be demanding that you owe me a piece of karka. You're sitting on my land, and I want my land back. And that's going to be the sugya for tomorrow, with the difference between kano miyado and lo kano miyado. Okay, then. So I'll take this opportunity to wish everyone a wonderful day. Okay, then.